afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and we're running a little late today, and I want to welcome you all back. Hope you had a nice holiday. It is Tuesday, May 30th, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Usually I hear the music, though, so anyway, it always throws us a little off.
You got to tune in a little bit. They play the music at a particular time, so you got to tune in.
Yeah, but he usually replays it. So anyway, we're not going to, you know, chit-chat over that debate that. But good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, gold struggled today. Silver was good today. We had gold down $4.30 at $1,263. We have silver up 7 pennies at $17.49. Platinum was down big today, down 21, a little over 2%, 943. Palladium was up 16 at 810. You have the USDX today trading slightly weaker, 0.17, 97.31, with crude oil down 31 at 49.49. The paper markets today, you have the Dow. Oh, let's see, down 51 points at 21,028. Yes, that was a big sigh, folks. I'm not good after having that day off. I'm just used to working, you know, 5.5, 6.5 days. So, you know, when I get that one day off, it ruins my routine. But
well, we can get you another job, Melody. I mean, there's got to be work down there by the boardwalk or whatever.
Well, it's not that I don't have the work. It's that having that day off yesterday was just is what throws me off. Anyway, NASDAQ was down 7 at 6,203, and the S&P was down 2 at 2412. The 10-year yield, 2.22%. The euro, 1.12, up 34. And that's about it. And I'll just repeat this once more. The Dow was down 51 at 21,028. The NASDAQ down 7 at 6,203. The S&P was down 2, almost 3 points at 2,412. Gold today, I will repeat that, 1,264, down 350. Silver was up 1,750. So there we go, Al.
Okay. Are you handing the ball off to me now? Is that what's happening?
You know, it was, I came across this, how California is pushing a $400 billion universal health care. They can't even pay for their pension.
They're going to have the healthiest impoverished retirees in the country.
But the California Senate Appropriations Committee passed a $400 billion universal health care bill Thursday last week, with no plan to pay for it. The committee passed the bill in a 5-2 vote, sending it to be taken up on the Senate floor this week. The bill, known as the Healthy California Act, was introduced by Democratic Senator Ricardo Lara, who also chairs the Senate Appropriations Committee. The Appropriations Committee's passage of the bill closely followed Monday's release of the first cost assessment of the bill, which projects that it would cost more than the state's entire budget for the year beginning July 1. Like, what's the point? It would eliminate the private insurance market. If passed, the new legislation would allow access to all medical care determined to be medically appropriate by the member's health care provider. So they really would dictate what you do and what you don't get. The legislation gives a nearly exhaustive list of treatment options, including acupuncture and chiropractic care. That's big in California.
How about transgender? Will they be able to get free transgender?
Probably. Under the proposed system, 40 million Californians would be able to see any specialist without a referral, and co-pays and deductibles would be prohibited. The new bill, which places no health care utilization restrictions on Californians, would be paid for in part by $200 billion in funds reallocated from other government health care programs like Medicare and Medicaid. The state would be required to implement a $200 billion tax hike in order to cover the remaining cost of the bill. So, it's kind of interesting.
Well, it's a good thing that whoever it is that sponsored that bill, he's not in charge of the education, the California education, because apparently the man can't read.
or he can't add.
Yeah, mathematics, dude. Can't read, can't add, subtract, whatever, but he can get elected.
Well, I mean, if they can pass a $200 billion tax hike and then take the $200 billion and just reallocate it from, you know, the Medicare and the Medicaid, but, you know, that's very dangerous because, again, they get to determine, you know, who are those, who is behind that is going to determine what is appropriate for you, for your health care. So they really do take over everything about your health care.
They will.
You wouldn't pay a dime. You know, your taxes would go up, you know, but there's no deductible. You know, there's no, you know, you would have to pay anything. It'd be free, so to speak. Nothing is free, but that's how they play it.
Free for some people, but other people have to pay. If you have a job, you'll have to pay
people
for
who
it.
Pay.
If you don't have a job, it'll be free.
Yeah, it'll be free. So, you know, it's, well, if you don't have a job, I mean, you're probably already getting Medicare and Medicaid, so they're taking, you know, that away from there in order to put your bill in there, too. But no co-pays. You can see any specialist without a referral. So it'll be interesting to see if that, you know, what the Senate does with that. But I thought that was kind of interesting. And,
you know, the idea, I've said this on the program before, but the idea that the government can fix these kinds of problems is just about pretty close to absurd. The reason government is in this is because government restricts the supply of doctors. Their licensing procedures make sure that there are a relatively small number of doctors. It's the same thing. There are a relatively small number of the licensed attorneys. And the idea behind that is they keep the attorney fees up by having a relatively small number. Now, they're having problems with it and whatever, but what I'm trying to get to is this. It is, there are people living in impoverished conditions who can't afford a brain surgeon. All right, but they could afford somebody else. They can afford nurses, and there are nurses out there that can do a lot of the things that doctors do for a lot less. And they have to. They can help the doctors, but in the end, the doctors make the most important decisions and perform the most important acts. There's a lot of things nurses can do. And all I'm trying to get to is, there was a time in this country where if you wanted to be a lawyer, all you had to do is read the law books. And when you thought you understood something about the law, hang out your shingle and say, "I'm a lawyer." If anybody hired you, fine. If you won a few cases, you'd do better. If you lost a few, you'd be back to farming or whatever. But the free market would supply however many lawyers and judges and whatever we needed in this country. When the government gets in and starts to regulate, they reduce they restrict the supply of whatever profession it is they're talking about with their licensing procedures. Prices go up. It costs the public more, and they create an absence of plumbers or lawyers or doctors for poor people. A lot of this could be resolved if government would just mind its own business and let the free market handle the problem. And, you know, you're asking, what can they do? California is going to screw this up. You can bet this is going to be a disaster. I mean, does anyone look at this and actually think California is going to be able to make a program like this work? Assuming that it gets passed and enacted and the rest of that sort of thing, we already know from the mathematics that this thing can't possibly work. It's going to be a disaster. If California really wanted to do some good for people, medical care in this country, first thing they ought to do is stop regulating medical care. The only regulation you need is just sue people. If they mess up, sue them. The message goes out. People get the message. Other doctors say, "Oh my gosh, you better not do that. You see what this idiot did? And he got sued for $50 million or something." Well, that tells doctors don't do that anymore. They learn. But this government regulation, it just makes things worse. It inevitably reduces the supply, raises prices. Now they're going to have to ration medical care. And they say someone's going to decide whether you get any or you don't get any medical care. It means medical care will be rationed. It means that they understand there's not enough medical services to provide all the things they're promising. More debacle, but might get people elected right now and debacle. Elections now and debacle later. And that seems to be the pattern for our politicians.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a lot of the same old news. Of course, you hear about the, of course, you know, the mainstream media is, you know, talking about, you know, Jared and his Russian connections. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's, you know, and again, it's all overblown and so forth. Congress expands Russia's investigation, excuse me, to include Trump's personal attorney. I mean, you know, it just goes on. And it's just, and it's like no one is really focusing on really the facts of what truly is going on in this country. It's just like everybody is zeroed in and no one is really paying attention, it seems like, to anything else. And it's really kind of bizarre that this has become such a huge distraction as far as the Russian collusion, you know. And it's, you know,
It's one of those things. Are we getting the news? Or are we getting circus? You know, and it diminishes the credibility of news media in general.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, one of the things that's actually, what did I see just the other day? Oh, it was a survey of how many people thought positively about Bill Clinton. It pointed out that 10 years ago, Clinton was, a lot of people thought he was one of the two or three best presidents this country's ever had. Now it's down to maybe 1 in 10. There were like half the country said, yay, Bill Clinton. Now it's down to something like 1 in 10 still believes in the Clinton legacy and whatever. And I find that encouraging, not simply because I'm a critic of Bill Clinton, but it does show, from my perspective, that the public does figure this stuff out. They may be slow to figure it out, but they do get to the truth. It may take them a decade, but they do kind of move to the truth. And that's encouraging to me because we see so many reports that are critical of the average American's intelligence and knowledge and rest of it. And, you know, I don't doubt that the reports, the claims, the opinions, there's validity in those. But just the same, there is a slow movement to the truth, and the public does figure it out after a while. Now, it may be that we won't find out some critical truths until perhaps it's too late because we're not moving fast enough, but it's still encouraging to me to see that the public is, they're not just a bunch of incompetents. They slowly absorb and they get to the truth. And what brought that on, Melody? What were you talking about that reminded me of
just
Clinton?
Just the bizarre news, and you know, there's very little of it. It's the same thing day in, day out.
Well, my point then is that the people are going to figure this out sooner or later. There are going to be adverse groups that are going to hammer Trump and hammer Trump and hammer Trump and hammer Trump until finally the public slowly begins to pick up on the idea that, you know, maybe this isn't reasonable. It may take some time, months, maybe years, you know. But at least they come around, and when they do, maybe they find out. We'll watch and see what the truth will come out, but when it does come out, maybe we're going to see that a lot of people are going to change their opinions about Trump, and they'll also change whatever opinions they may have about the mainstream media. And the point here is, if the mainstream media is lying, if they are exaggerating, if they are hyping, you know, certain reports just in order to attack rather than to communicate information, if that's what's happening, that opinion will be increasingly embraced by people in the public. They will see it. They'll understand it. And you're going to find less people paying attention to the mainstream media, which means they're going to have less advertising, which means they're going to have less revenue, which means they're going to tend to fold up and leave a place open for alternative media that maybe looks at things from a different perspective and perhaps even gets to the truth once in a while. So, I don't know. Sometimes, you know, is the glass half empty or is the glass half full, Melody? And more importantly, who's responsible for washing the glass?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, Brzezinski passed away on Friday. You know, we often talk about the elite and their goals and how they've influenced. You talk about influencing elections and policy and so forth. He was probably the elite of the, you know, certainly not in Rothschild's league, I don't think, but he certainly has had an impact on our policies.
He's had an impact on the United States and world affairs, and he's not even born in this country.
No. And I don't think he ever became. I don't think he ever became a citizen.
I don't know.
I don't.
I'm going to assume he. Well, that's something I'd never heard before. I mean, he was national security advisor under the Carter administration. You would think they'd remedy that omission.
He was also the trustee and founder of the Trilateral Commission.
Yeah.
He certainly has served as the head and president and chairman of the Council of Foreign Relations. I mean, he's been involved in all of those, and you know, he started, you know, when he graduated from Harvard in 1953. I think you mentioned that he was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's been.
And he's been through a lot of it, and some of it worked for him, some of it worked against him. Sometimes he was right, sometimes it was shown to be wrong, but he didn't quit. I don't know. I'm not arguing whether he's a good guy or bad guy. What do you think on balance, Melody? Good or bad?
No, he was an elite. He wanted one world government.
He hated the Soviet Union.
He was, you know, he was a Bilderberger. You know, he's very powerful.
Oh, I know. And, he was very influential. And one of the things that motivated him is his father was a diplomat, and they were forced to leave Poland and Europe by the Soviet Union after World War II. All right? And he hated the Soviet Union throughout his lifetime, and he was just looking for an opportunity to, you know, send him the kingdom come. He was nominally a Democrat, but he stood to the right of many Republicans in his hatred for the Soviet Union. He was even to further right than Kissinger and Nixon, and during his 4 years under Carter, thwarting Soviet expansion at any cost guided much of American foreign policy, for better or for worse, and that was Mr. Brzezinski pushing that. And it was interesting. You know, it really is kind of his life is an extraordinary story, because it's a story of one man who was so enraged that he was forced to leave his homeland. He came back and he made a big impact on the entire
world. Yeah, the destruction of our country. So
I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm saying it's an extraordinary story.
You know, he's
going to take
up
the commercials, Melody.
He's no different than Kissinger.
No, I get it. We're going to take a break, a couple of commercials, be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We're talking about Leonard Zbigniew Brzezinski. One of the things, you know, I think he could have been president if he would have just changed his first name to where they could pronounce it or spell it.
Well, he would have fit right in with the other ones.
Maybe so. Any case, my point is, I'm not for Brzezinski. I can't say I ever liked the guy or whatever. But when you look at all he did and the role he played, to me, it's evidence what one man can do if he cares, if he really has. He needs a certain amount of talent. He may need some support from other people, but nevertheless, you can accomplish things in this world.
Yeah,
I'm not saying it's easy, but it can be done.
You got to read up on his history. He can accomplish these things, but was it for the good or for the?
Well, I'm telling you, I've said in the beginning,
you know, his
hatred for the Soviet Union was unrivaled. They ran him off his home, ran him out of his home. I doubt that he ever forgave the Soviet Union for that. All right, he worked to destroy him. Everything. It was an obsession. It was a compulsion. It was not necessarily a good thing. He might have just said, okay, enough of that. Let's get on with the world and get on with life here, and I don't have to be focused on the Soviet Union. But it created the basis for a monomania, maybe?
Yeah.
Where he proceeded.
New world order.
Well, the point is, some people can help. The same thing could apply to someone who wanted to take down the new world order. You could also work hard enough and deal with sufficient diligence, intelligence, education, and you may be able to take down the New World Order.
Yeah, well. What's
I
next,
find
Al?
That interesting.
What's
I don't
next,
know.
Al?
We got some stuff on Bitcoin. All right? Now, here's an article, just part of it. It's a lengthy article, and I'm just going to do a little bit of it. What's going on with Bitcoin from Phoenix Capital? Bitcoin hits $2,700 in the last week or so.
And it dropped 500 points.
Yeah, I get that, but it's still got to 2,700. It's a 500-fold increase in 5 years, doubling in price since the 1st of May. Now it's fallen back in. I get that, all right? And they say previous surges in 2011 and 2013 have been followed by dramatic crashes. Significant premium seen in Asia over the U.S. dollar price. Total cryptocurrency market cap reached over $90 billion. There's $90 billion apparently invested in cryptocurrency right now. It doesn't say Bitcoin. It would be, I assume they mean all of them. I don't know that it's $90 billion in Bitcoin. It might be, or maybe it's $90 billion in all cryptocurrencies. But that's $90 billion that is not, it's not being invested in new automobiles exactly. It's tied up in Bitcoin. That's interesting to me. Market remains small and volatile. Comparisons between Bitcoin and gold are old, invalid, and misleading. Both Bitcoin and gold offer opportunities to diversify away from a corrupt financial system. And Phoenix Capital wants to know what's going on with Bitcoin. All right. And when they have a fairly lengthy article that talks about it, but I've been wondering the same thing. And what I mean by that is this. Something extraordinary is happening. Everyone listening to this program, oh my God, what's going on with Bitcoin? It's increased 500 times, 500-fold in the last something like 5 years. This is phenomenal. This is it's something that's almost never been seen before. And you have to wonder, you sit back and say, you know, what exactly is a cryptocurrency? Is it an idea whose time has come? Where they say nothing more powerful than an idea that's whose time has come. Is it some amazing technology that everyone wants to get in on at the ground floor so we can make a killing? I mean, if it's gone up 500 times in the last 5 years, what can it do in the next five? It's a phenomenon, that's for sure. The price of Bitcoin has increased by 500 times again the last 5 years, doubled in the last month. We can all see that something extraordinary has happened and is happening and may continue to happen. But what exactly are we looking at? What is Bitcoin? You know, it's happening, but what is it? Well, Bolivia has just answered my question. And here's an article from Cointelegraph, which is a publication, a magazine, an electronic magazine, digital magazine, that is in favor of all of the cryptocurrencies and all of this. And it's really very well done, nicely done magazine. The rest of it, they are in favor of Bitcoin and Ethereum, and I don't even know all the names of the other cryptocurrencies that are out there, but they are they're rooting for the Bitcoins. Well, they published an article entitled "Bolivia Calls Cryptocurrency Pyramid Scheme, Arrests Advocates." And the article says Bolivian lawmakers have enacted a crackdown on cryptocurrency use, arresting 60 people at a workshop and describing it as a pyramid scheme. Now, I'd written a little article that involved pyramid schemes back a month or 6 weeks ago. And I thought, my God, that's right. That's what this is. This is a pyramid scheme. I mean, I would be surprised. There's people listening to this program, and if you are interested, you see, my God, somebody's making money hand over fist in this Bitcoin thing. Well, what is it? Well, I don't know what it is. Okay, but they're making money. What more do I need to know? Well, maybe you do need to know what it is. And I think Bolivian lawmakers enacting this crackdown on cryptocurrency, declaring it to be a pyramid scheme, I think they're right. And I think they told me. I think they've explained this now. I think, my God, they're right. Wikipedia defines pyramid scheme as follows. It says a pyramid scheme is a business model that recruits members via a promise of payments or services for enrolling others into the scheme rather than supplying investments or sale of products or services. For example, let's just illustrate and try to get this clear. You can have multi-level marketing. And we can sell hair products. We can sell vitamins. We can sell health products. We can sell, I don't know, air fresheners, anything you want to do through multi-level marketing. They are selling a product. The more people that I recruit, that's useful. If I'm in that multi-level marketing pyramid or structure, if I've got 5 people working under me to sell hair products, okay? I can make X, in theory, I can make X number of dollars because I get a commission on whatever the people I bring in, whatever they sell, I get a commission on them. If I bring in 10 people, in theory, I can double my commissions. If I bring 50 people, I can increase my commissions by a factor of 10. But I can bring 50 people in, and if nobody sells anything, I don't make a dime. I'm not getting paid per person. I'm getting paid per sale. We're selling something. This is multi-level marketing. It is not a pyramid scheme. A pyramid scheme is when we go out and we start something, and the only thing you have to do to make more money is bring more people in. They don't have to sell anything. There is no product being sold. There's no service being provided. We can debate whether or not Bitcoin is certainly not providing a product. That's certain. You get into Bitcoin and what do you get? How do you make more money on Bitcoin? Well, if I can get, if I buy some Bitcoin, I can get another dozen people to buy Bitcoin behind me. The price goes up. I have made a profit because I have caused 8, 10, a dozen, 1,000 people to come out and buy more Bitcoin. Then the value of my Bitcoin goes up and I've made a profit. But we haven't sold anything. And that is consistent with the definition of a pyramid scheme. And I think this is coming again from the Bolivian government. I think this is, again, the definition entirely, or the pyramid scheme is a business model that recruits members via a promise of payments or services for enrolling others in the scheme, rather than supplying investment or sale of products and services. As recruiting multiplies, recruiting becomes quickly impossible and most members are unable to profit. As such, pyramid schemes are unsustainable and often illegal. Price of Bitcoin is rising fantastically, as we've pointed out, 500 times in 5 years, doubled in 30 days. Why? Again, Is Bitcoin an idea whose time has come, or is it a pyramid scheme? You can tell me. Does Bitcoin produce any tangible goods or services? It does not. You know, if I were going to buy stock in a factory that made automobiles, and they had some revolutionary new engine that could get 100 miles per gallon of gasoline, all right, this is a basis for an investment. We got a new car, a new engine. It's going to cut gasoline usage by, you know, by 90% or 80% or something. Right? We've got an advantage. We've got an economy. We're selling something. That's not a pyramid scheme. But does Bitcoin produce any tangible goods and services? Not obviously. All right? It's linked to blockchain. But what is that? I mean, you don't get a blockchain to go along with your... you get a free blockchain with every cheeseburger, quarter pounder with cheese. No, you don't. I mean, this is a technology. It might be construed as a service, but even Bitcoin doesn't really control its services. These are two things moving in parallel, but they're not the same. The one doesn't, you know, has Bitcoin become more productive than it was when it was first inaugurated? I don't think so. Has Bitcoin found a new oil field in Texas or a new gold deposit in Alaska? No. Then what makes Bitcoin today more valuable than it was a month ago? Why is it higher? And the answer is more and more people are demanding to own Bitcoin because the price has been rising simply because more and more people want it. That's all. This, so far as I can see, conforms pretty much to the definition of a pyramid scheme. That's what we're looking at here. And when you begin to see that, it becomes apparent this is going to blow up. There is no fundamental value in the Bitcoin. And people are injecting substantial sums of their wealth into the Bitcoin, believing that other people are going to inject even more substantial sums of their wealth into Bitcoin, who will believe that other people will inject even more substantial sums of their wealth into the Bitcoin, and so on. But the truth of the matter is, sooner or later, we're going to reach a point where the Bitcoin simply doesn't work anymore. It isn't going up. And once that happens, all of a sudden people are going to look around and say, huh, what am I doing with this Bitcoin? Price isn't going up anymore. And they're going to begin to realize, wait a second, why did it go up in the first place? Just because other people were buying it? Doesn't provide anything. Not like buying, you know, a brand new car with a carburetor that'll give you 100 miles a gallon. That's not what we've got here. We have nothing more. This is identical. I've said this a time or two in the past, that it has struck me as something like the tulip mania, which afflicted Holland. I don't recall. I think it was in the 1600s. Where people were investing in tulips, right? And they got to a point where a good tulip bulb, you would cost you something like three times the annual salary of a highly skilled craftsman. They were nothing but tulips. And everybody just, they got into it like lemmings, and they followed, and all of a sudden they realized, oh my God, these are nothing but tulips. We're putting all our money into tulips. Well, I think we're seeing some, the tulip mania is what it came to be called. And it has led to an economic collapse. Everybody, all of a sudden, they came to their senses, and they realized, my God, I've invested all my wealth in a bunch of tulip bulbs. Well, I think maybe I've seen that. I've sensed that parallel, that possible parallel to Bitcoin. And now I see this report where Bolivia says it's a pyramid scheme. And I have to admit, I think they're right. And so, you know, there's my little message, my message du jour on what is Bitcoin? What are the cryptocurrencies? And I think they're right. I think it's a pyramid scheme. And the last line, or pretty close to the last line, it's in the article. This is from Cointelegraph. And Cointelegraph, again, is in favor. They are cheerleaders for the cryptocurrency environment. But here's something from the Bolivian government. It says, we're telling the Bolivian population not to be fooled, not to participate in these closed groups, which take advantage of people and deceive them in order to appropriate their money. And there's a certain amount of truth to that. People are selling Bitcoin to get more people to invest money in Bitcoin to make your Bitcoin worth more money. And the only thing that you can ultimately do with that is you've got to cash in before the rest of the idiots figure out what's going on, and you can live large. But you have taken wealth from other people, and they got nothing in return. You didn't give them a car or a boat or a trip to the Caribbean or something like that. They got nothing to show for it. It's like betting on a horse race that there are no horses. There's no track, but we're going to bet on the horse race anyway. And the Cointelegraph goes on and concludes this: Bolivia's confusing incomprehension of cryptocurrency appears coupled with even more draconian measures than those previously witnessed in South American economy of Venezuela. I think Cointelegraph's description of Bolivia as having a confusing incomprehension of currency, I don't think that's accurate. I think Bolivia came pretty close. There may be some little variations, but I think this is, if this isn't 100% pyramid scheme, I think it's 90%. There might be a couple of, there may be a gray area in there a little bit. They provide maybe a little bit of services, but this is a good observation. Cryptocurrency is a pyramid scheme, and if that's correct, you know, you invest in it at your own peril.
There was also some commentary based on the reasons why Bitcoin increased so drastically in the past couple of weeks was due to the hacking, the ransomware. Mm-hmm. That we saw, yeah. Some you'll read where there weren't that many companies that paid it, but then again, there was quite a few companies that were hit, and they used the Bitcoin in order to pay the ransom. So
they anticipate fake. Being hit more, so they're buying Bitcoin. Right? They're buying Bitcoin because they anticipate the hackers are going to break them again, and they're going to want to be paid in Bitcoin. Well, even that doesn't make a great deal of sense to me.
I don't know if they pre-buy it, but they at least have to buy it in order to pay. Mm. If you have a fluctuating investment, I wouldn't pre-buy it, when it's at its high. But the reason they were buying it for whatever reason was because of the hacking. The ransomware.
I get that. And, it's like if the people that hack into your computer and they lock down your information, they can say, we insist we're only paid in coconuts. Well, if you're only got to be paid in coconuts, that's what they want. We'll give them coconuts. But still, the fundamental idea behind Bitcoin, there is no tangible value there. We're buying it because we're buying it because we're buying it. That's all. And when people wake up to that, we're going to stop buying it. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Got an article here from International Business Times, and the headline is U.S. Moving Third Aircraft Carrier-Led Strike Group Towards North Korea in Unprecedented Show of Force. You know, when Donald Trump announced that the first aircraft carrier was going up over to North Korea, he said he was sending an armada. And the armada consisted of one aircraft carrier and two destroyers, if I understand correctly. There were three ships altogether, which I thought that would, that was a, I didn't think that was a very persuasive armada. I think you need more ships to constitute an armada. But he's apparently moved a second one over there already. And now he's got a third one headed toward North Korea. It says Washington is sending its third aircraft carrier-led strike group to the Western Pacific stretch close to the waters of the Korean Peninsula in what is seen as an unusual show of force. It's not just unusual. This is something like Pearl Harbor, in that it's not good business to put all your destroyers and battleships and whatever in one harbor. You make an almost irresistible target, and likewise, you put all three of your aircraft carriers. Well, we have other aircraft carriers. I think we have eight altogether. I'm not sure. But you put three of your aircraft carriers in the same region at the same time. You're kind of exposing them. And there's a risk involved here. But they describe this as an unusual show of force amid tensions in the region. USS Nimitz, one of the world's largest warships, will join two other supercarriers, USS Carl Vinson and the USS Ronald Reagan, which are already sailing in the region. It is extremely rare for the U.S. to deploy three aircraft carriers simultaneously in the same region, and this is additionally significant given the existing tensions in the Korean Peninsula. It really does look like Trump's going to do something here. It does not look like he is planning to just accept a little bit of talk. It looks like he's made up his mind to do something physical and military. The U.S. Navy has not explicitly said the Nimitz is intended for operations related to North Korea, but said the aircraft carrier will be mobilized in the Asia-Pacific and the Middle East. Both the Reagan and Vinson are nuclear-powered Nimitz-class carriers hosting dozens of warplanes. With 1,092-foot Reagan, okay, carrying 4,500 crew members, was sent to the region in mid-May, while the Vincent was deployed in April. A ship 1,092 feet long is a fifth of a mile. That's a pretty long ship. Yeah. It'll take you a few minutes to walk from one end to the other. That's a monster, and all three of these are Nimitz class carriers, and presumably, I don't know what the length is of the Vinson and the Nimitz itself, but presumably they are all somewhere around 1,000 foot long. That's a pretty big ship. 4,500 crew members. We're gonna watch and see what happens, but the point to this is it does appear, I don't think Trump can back out of this now.
Oh, he's going to do it. I mean,
he's now putting.
I mean, this is just his personality too, and South Korea said it had conducted a joint drill with the U.S. supersonic B-1B Lancer bomber today or yesterday. North Korea's state media earlier accused the United States of staging a drill to practice dropping nuclear bombs on the Korean Peninsula. They also, yesterday, the North Korean leader, he supervised the test of a new ballistic missile that is controlled by a precision guidance system and ordered the development of more powerful strategic weapons. The missile launched on Monday was equipped with an advanced automated pre-launch sequence compared with previous versions of the Hwasong rockets. Let's see. So again, they're continuing their tests. They seem to be advancing in their tests, and he says he's going to. Kim said the reclusive state would develop more powerful weapons in multiple phases in accordance with its timetable to defend North Korea against the United States. He expressed the conviction that it would make a greater leap forward in the spirit to send a bigger gift package to the Yankees in retaliation for American military provocation. So, and he was quoted by saying that by their newspaper, of course. But so, more threats.
It looks like the morons have taken over the asylum, Melody.
Sanctions don't seem to, you know, mean anything to him.
No.
Japan has urged China to play a bigger role in trying to restrain North Korea's nuclear missile programs. So they had talks with them on Monday. So it's weird that you had all these drills, that test, and Japan talking with China all on Monday. You know, it just seems that everything was kind of coordinated for that day. So.
I don't know. We'll watch and see. Here's another along the same line. New generation of bombs undetectable by airport scanners. What's the solution? This is from Mish Shedlock. It says, in part, the U.S. believes ISIS bomb-making research includes new generation of explosives. Amid the bombed-out ruins of Mosul University, U.S. officials say they have uncovered evidence that the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS, was developing a new type of bomb that could pass through airport scanners undetected. U.S. officials believe the ISIS research includes a new generation of more powerful explosives that could be concealed in a computer. When ISIS overran Mosul in 2014, they also captured the city's international airport and with it all the modern security scanners and screening equipment necessary to test their new bomb. So this is one of those things that is a certain amount of doom and gloom. This is not happening yet, but it may be happening some point. And if they are correct, if they do have bombs that can that are undetectable by airport scanners, we're going to, if that's possible, we're going to see that. All right? It's going to happen. It might not happen this year. I don't know when it's going to happen, but you can bet there's somebody working to build a better bomb, and the world will build a, and the world will beat a path to your doorstep. And here's something along the same lines. This is from CNN. Homeland Security Secretary. People would never leave the house if they knew what I know. All right? Department of Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly said Friday that the American public would never leave the house if they knew what he knew about terrorist threats. Speaking to Fox and Friends hosts, Kelly noted that there were four major terror attacks in last week spanning England to Indonesia, perpetrated by generally the same groups. It's everywhere. It's constant. It's nonstop, he said of the terrorist threat. The good news is that for America is we have amazing people protecting us every day. Well, let's hope that's true. But it can happen here almost any time. Kelly's comments come on the heels of a tense week following the terrorist attack in concert at a concert in Manchester, England on Monday that killed 22 people and injured dozens more. The bombing largely targeted young children and teenagers. ISIS has claimed credit. It's just more evidence that we live in interesting times.
Well, we also have hundreds of Iranian-backed militiamen fighting alongside government troops that are loyal to the Syrian president, Assad. They're amassing near a U.S. training base that's located near the country's border with Iraq. Pro-Assad fighters supported by Tehran have begun conducting patrols near the southern Syrian town of Pat-Tanf, which is home to a U.S. training camp for moderate Syrian militias battling the Islamic State. American commanders and their Russian counterparts, you know, it's kind of like, who are all these players anymore? I don't think anybody really knows who's fighting who anymore.
I understand.
You know, I mean, one minute we're giving, you know, weapons to the, you know, to the rebels of Syria, and those weapons are going to I mean, it really is just insane and bizarre. But again, more just another part, another group where it's heating up. But you know what? I'm just going to go back because we're running out of time to go back to Brzezinski. And I do believe these, the elitists, those that are in this group of, I don't know what you want to call them, New World Order, whatever, I do believe they give messages through their speeches. Mm. And you can learn a lot from listening to their speeches along the way. And it was only back, I believe, in like around 2013 that he talked about how the major world powers, both new and old, face a novel reality. And this novel reality is that the people are becoming politically awakened.
Yeah.
And they call, and he called them their capacity to impose control over the politically awakened masses of the world is at a historic low.
Mm-hmm.
So in earlier times, it was easier to control 1 million people than to physically kill 1 million people. Today, it is infinitely easier to kill 1 million people than to control 1 million people. That was back in 2010 during a Council of Foreign Relations speech in Montreal. And he later goes on, and I think it was 2013, where he talks about the same thing, that there's this new awakening of the masses. And basically, you have to have a, in order to control these, you create a situation where people feel they are in danger,
yeah,
to where the people will come together. And I think this is what we're seeing now. I think this is why we have so many of the things that are stirred up. I mean, there's stuff going on everywhere in the Middle East. I mean, you name it, there's something going on. And I think this is why it's constantly being thrown in our... They do plan on killing a lot of people. They need to get that control back. And what better way to get that control back is through war of some sort. And so... That's how I wanted to end with Brzezinski. Yeah, he was, and I do believe these are messages. You can find messages in their speeches, and that's.
Well, they tell you what's going on. They tell you what's going on. If you, I mean, they'll tell you 90% of what's going on if you are the kind of person who's sufficiently diligent to read what they write. But it takes some real effort to pour through all the documents they produce and pick out and themes and trends and whatever and see what they're really up to. Most people won't make that effort, and therefore most people don't know, but it's not everything is a big secret. At least the strategic ideas, you know, they make them out, they put them out, this is what we're trying to do. I'll let you know if you can read it, you can believe what you've read, you know. It's just, here's one more on Brzezinski, quote. He said, "A United States in decline, one unwilling or unable to protect states at once considered for national interests and or doctrinal reasons worthy of engagement." In other words, he says, he's talking about if we're in decline and we're no longer able to protect the countries we used to have alliances with because we thought it was in our interest to do so. He said, "The United States in decline could lead to a protracted phase of rather inconclusive and somewhat chaotic realignments of both global and regional power, with no grand winners and many more losers." And that's not far removed from where we are. I mean, Everybody's got a gripe. Huh? Well, maybe not everybody, but you know, you get what I'm saying. There are people that are angry. They're willing to build a bomb. They're willing to shoot. They're willing to do. They're not capable or inclined to be highly organized. They are functioning on the basis of something like lone wolves, relatively small cells of individuals. And maybe they act and maybe they just talk about it, but the result is there is a chaotic realignment. It's taking place in the Middle East. I mean, good and all. You know, what's going on over there? Does anyone really know? Is there a major theme, or people, like Melody said, who's with us and who's against us? You almost need a daily report to find out, okay, who are we bombing today? ISIS? Okay, let's bomb ISIS. And tomorrow, who are we bombing? No, we're bombing the Syrian rebels. We're not doing ISIS today. We're doing Syrian rebels. And who is with us? Who's against us? The whole thing is in a grand state of flux. And Brzezinski seemed to anticipate or see that that was coming. So yeah, if you give him credit. No grand winners and many more losers. And I think he's right. A lot of people are going to die.
I don't know if he saw it, but I mean, he kind of creates it.
Creates it, whatever, he anticipates it. Takes credit for it, whatever, but we do seem to be, Brzezinski understood a lot of it. He didn't have perfect knowledge. He wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but he understood a lot, and he was worth listening to. We're out of time, basically, Melody and I.
Know your enemy.
Yeah, I know, try to figure out now. Try to figure out whoever that is. Try to know them. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams.